Alright, good evening. So, new series begins tonight. Last time we were together, we finished up the third book of the Bible, the book of Leviticus, and we saw the ties, especially of the book of Leviticus, to the New Testament book of Hebrews. We are heading on this evening, plowing on in the book of Numbers, the fourth book of the Bible, the fourth book of the Pentateuch. And so we're going to start tonight with an overview. It's my desire to do my best to make the text smaller for us. Not in a glory way, but in a sense of being able to get our arms around as we read through in our devotional reading, read through a book like Leviticus or a book like Numbers. If we could have a couple of foundational things in our head as we move through those books, my hope is that those books would be more accessible to us, and we would be able to glean wonderful things from God's law. So, let's see. There are a couple of introductory things before we dive into the actual text. So, as I mentioned previously, in the overview of Leviticus, and then last week, very briefly, in the conclusion of Leviticus, I mentioned that the book of Leviticus takes place over about 1 month. So if you look at the end of Exodus and the beginning of Numbers, what transpires in there, in between Exodus and Numbers, is approximately 1 month. Numbers, and by the way, I didn't mention this, but if you go back, Exodus, in case you didn't know, spans about 80 years. It spans the first two-thirds of Moses' life. He spends 40 years in Egypt and then 40 years in Midian. And then he began, you know, the Exodus is from the birth of Moses to the time when essentially he returns back to Egypt as he's 80 years old. And Genesis is centuries, even thousands of years. So there's a wide range of span in these first books of the Bible. So Leviticus was 1 month. Numbers is 39 years. There's 39 years in the book of Numbers. Let's just call it around 40. That's what engineers do. So it's essentially, again, another generation, and it's the last third of Moses' life. So just to give you a time span for the book of Numbers. It's called Numbers because there are lots of numbers in it. And I'm not trying to be facetious there. It's true. There are actually two censuses of the Israelites. There's a census of the Israelite tribes in chapter 1, and there's a census of the Israelite tribes in chapter 26. And there are 39 years between those two censuses. So, as we said in Leviticus, Leviticus was only there to answer one question. So, I will say this. Numbers answers the following questions. Question, what happens in these 39 years? What is going on in the 39 years between the erection of the tabernacle in Exodus 40 and the giving of the law, the Levitical law in the book of Leviticus, and then Moses' death, Joshua coming to be the leader of Israel, and the beginning of the conquest of Canaan? That's 39, essentially 40 years, and Numbers gives us what is going on during that time. And then, as I mentioned, you know, why are there two censuses? And that's really, Numbers is going to answer that question for us as well. So here's what's going on at a high-level overview in the book of Numbers during the course of these 39 years. Okay. The first thing, generally speaking, is that the Israelites are moving through the wilderness. Okay, the wilderness is a very important motif of the book of Numbers. That word is actually used in the book of Numbers almost 50 times. All right. So what's a wilderness in this context? So it's not agricultural. So they are not settling down to farm. All right. They are moving around. They are tending flocks. And of course, as you know, they are being fed by manna. All right. So they are not farming. They're tending flocks. And they are being fed by God in his supernatural manna. So that's generally what's happening. The Israelites are moving through the wilderness throughout the book of Numbers. All right, a little bit more specifically, I'm going to lay out a high-level outline for you. So this comes to us in five acts. All right, five acts. So they begin at the beginning of the book of Numbers at Mount Sinai. That's where we ended in Exodus. That's where we begin in the book of Numbers, at Mount Sinai. And that first act in the book of Numbers takes place through chapters 1 through 10. Chapters 10 through 12, the Israelites are on the move, and they're moving toward a place called Kadesh, K-A-D-E-S-H. That third act at Kadesh are chapters 13 through 20. In chapters 20 and 21, there's another movement of the Israelites as they are on their way to the plains of Moab, M-O-A-B. And they will spend the last 15 chapters, chapters 22 through 36, in Moab. All right, so they begin in Sinai, they move to Kadesh, they move to Moab. That is the movement of the book of Numbers. Now, let me one level down, a little bit more detailed. From the beginning of Numbers to the end of chapter 14, this is the second year after the Exodus. So this is right after the Exodus. They are still at Sinai and on the move to Kadesh. So from chapters 1 through the end of chapter 14, this is the second year after the Exodus. If I skip forward, chapters 20 to 36 are in the 40th year after the Exodus. Okay? So 1 to 14 are the second year after the Exodus. 20 to 36 are the 40th year after the Exodus. And then you have in between chapters 15 through 19, there are events in there and some descriptions of some things in there. And they're basically what we would call undated events. We don't know exactly where in those 39 years those events take place. There are no time descriptors actually in the text to give us a sense of when those events occur. For example, Korah's rebellion. We don't know exactly what year of the 40 that occurred. All right, so that's your high-level overview. Sinai to Kadesh to Moab, and most of the events, the beginning, are going to be in the second year, just after the Exodus, and most of the events near the end of the book are going to be in the 40th year after the Exodus, Moses' final year of earth. And by the way, for those of you keeping score, that 40th year after the Exodus is sometime around 1405 BC. 1405 BC. I'm not going to go through it here, but previously in the Exodus study, I laid the groundwork for the early date of the Exodus being around 1450 or so. And so I'm going to argue here that 40th year after the Exodus is about 1405 BC or thereabouts. All right, so we had this Israelites moving through the wilderness, and then we talked about the detail of Sinai to Kadesh to Moab. Also what Numbers is giving to us, and this is sort of the sad part of the story, as it were, is it's giving us a lot of complaining and rebellion of the Israelites. That is what we are going to see again and again and again. Now, we have already seen some of this in the book of Exodus, and I will return at the end to a comparison between the books of Exodus and Numbers. But for now, I just want to talk a little bit about what we see in what we're going to see in the book of Numbers, and that is complaints and rebellion. So in Numbers chapter 1 to 12, Israel is on the border of Canaan, okay? So they're moving, as we'll see in the census, in Numbers chapter 1, they're moving about 600,000 men, plus the women and children, out of Egypt as part of the Exodus, and they're on their way to Canaan. Why are they on their way to Canaan? Well, for that, we got to go all the way back to Genesis chapter 12 and Genesis chapter 15, because God has made a promise to Abraham that his descendants, after he liberates them out of slavery by the strength of his mighty right arm, And they come out with great possessions, which they plundered the Egyptians, if you remember, back in Exodus chapter 12. God's going to lead them out of Egyptian slavery. He's going to lead them to and into the land of Canaan. That was what God promised Abraham. And so that is where they're headed. They come out of Egypt. They go to Sinai. They establish the covenant. That's Exodus 20 through 23. And then from there, even if you're only leading 2+ million people into Canaan, the journey can't be more than a few weeks. It simply can't be. It's just not that far from Sinai to Canaan. Here's the problem. In Numbers 13, they get to the border of Canaan. And what happens? Perhaps you know. What happens is that Moses sends the 12 spies into the land of Canaan. That's Numbers chapter 13. And among those spies, of course, were Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb. So the spies get sent in. They bring back a mixed report. 10 of the spies come back after 40 days in the land of Canaan and say, "Wow, those people are huge. We're basically the size of caterpillars compared to them. There's no way we can take this land." Of course, you know Joshua and Caleb give a good report. "Yes, let's go in. The Lord has given us this land." Okay? But the majority of the spies, they rally the Israelites. They complain about the difficulties that they will have taking over the land of Canaan by God's decree, and they reject the good report of Joshua and Caleb. In Numbers 13 and 14, Moses intercedes again so that God doesn't kill the Israelites. However, the fallout from this complaining and this rejection of God's plan for them is that that generation, every man counted in the census in Numbers chapter 1, will have to die before God will deliver Canaan according to his promises to Abraham. And so the real turning point of the book of Numbers happens in Numbers 14, verses 20 to 23. So if you'd like, let's turn over there for a second. Numbers 14, 20 to 23. So, as I said, in Numbers 13, the spies get sent in. At the end of Numbers chapter 13, the spies give their report. At the beginning of Numbers 14, the people rebel. In the beginning, in Numbers chapter 14, verse 11, Moses once again intercedes for the people. And then in Numbers chapter 14, verse 20, "So the Lord Yahweh said, 'I have pardoned them according to your word,'" speaking to Moses. "But indeed, as I live, all the earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord. Surely all the men who have seen my glory and my signs, which I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, shall by no means see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who spurned me see it, but my servant Caleb, because he has had a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it." That is the hinge point of the book of Numbers. And that sets the timeline for the rest of the book of Numbers and, of course, Deuteronomy, which is Moses' farewell address to the nation Israel. And that is why there needs to be a second census in chapter 26, because after that first generation of Israelites falls in the wilderness because of their rejection of God, their complaining, a new generation has to be raised up and they have to be counted again in anticipation of the conquest of Canaan. All right, so Numbers chapter 14, verses 20 through 23 or 20 through 24, very, very important turning point in the book of Numbers. In Numbers chapter 16, we see Korah's rebellion. And so this is sometime during the wilderness wanderings in the undated events portion of Numbers. And then we see in Numbers chapter 21, the new generation of Israelites complains. Moses will intercede again in Numbers chapter 21. And then we have the famous story of the bronze serpent, which is raised up in the wilderness so that people will look at it and live. And of course, when we get there, we will spend some time in the Gospel of John as well. All right? So what we see in Numbers is complaints and rebellion from the early generation of the Israelites as well as the second generation of Israelites to come out of Egypt. All right. And as I previously mentioned, we have these two censuses, all right? And they will actually come out to be about the same number. There will be a recounting of the Levites. Again, they will be about the same number. So there's a full replacement of that first generation of Israelites. And then the second generation of Israelites will be the ones which will be tasked with going in and conquering Canaan and fulfilling the promise that God made to Abraham all the way back in Genesis 12 and 15. All right. Why is the book of Numbers, or why should the book of Numbers be important to us as New Testament believers? So I want to go to a couple places in the New Testament. If you would go there with me, please turn to 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10. So as we always do, as we did in Genesis and in Exodus and Leviticus, we spend a significant amount of time. That's 111 different sessions that we've done together now through the Pentateuch, and we spent a significant amount of time over those 111 sessions going into the New Testament and reading portions of the New Testament and demonstrating that those portions in the Old Testament are very important to us, or should be very important to us, and gives us a better understanding of what we read in the New Testament. And this is actually a text, 1 Corinthians 10, that we've been in a couple of times before, but I want to revisit it again because it should be ringing in your ears as we move through the book of Numbers. Paul, 1 Corinthians 10, beginning in verse 1, he writes this, "For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud, and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. And all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless," verse 5, "with most of them God was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness. Now these things happened as examples for us, that we should not crave evil things as they also craved. And do not be idolaters, as some of them were, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play. Nor let us act immorally, as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in one day. Nor let us try the Lord, as some of them did, and were destroyed by the serpents. Nor grumble, as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the end of the ages has come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, that you may be able to endure it." All right? So a very important text in the New Testament related to these events, which we have already seen, all right, back even in Exodus. So if you go back to verses 1 and 2, the cloud and the sea, this is clearly talking about the Exodus of the Israelites out of Egypt. Verse 3, they eat the same spiritual food. That's the manna, which we have already discussed back in Exodus. And all here in verse 4, we get to these rocks. And all drank the same spiritual drink, for they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. So we saw a rock in the book of Exodus, and we will see a rock again in the book of Numbers. And then in verse 5, that motif which I mentioned previously about how they were laid low in the wilderness. And the exhortation, of course, comes in verse 6, right? These things happened as examples for us that we should not crave evil things as they also craved. All right, and probably what's in view there is the episode which we will read about in Numbers about the quail. In verse 7, that is a reference back to Exodus chapter 32 and the golden calf incident. The people sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play. In verse 8, that is a reference to an episode which we will see in Numbers chapter 25. In verse 9, that's an episode in Numbers chapter 21, as I previously mentioned, the serpents that came through the camp and the bronze serpent that had to be raised up in order to save the Israelites' lives. And then in verse 10, we see an episode in Numbers 16. And that would be Korah's rebellion, most likely, is being referred to there, where the ground opens up and swallows those who are rebelling against God and his man, Moses. Okay? So very important for us to take heed of these narrative stories, because in his wisdom, God is giving us these narratives as part of redemptive history, not just to tell us what happened, but so that we would draw spiritual lessons from them. And so my hope is that as we head through Numbers, we would learn those lessons. One more text in the New Testament, if you would turn with me to Hebrews. We obviously spent a lot of time in Hebrews a week ago today, finishing up the book of Leviticus, but I want to go to Hebrews again. Hebrews chapter 3, we're going to begin in verse 12. So the exhortations and the warnings in 1 Corinthians 10 were not to do certain things, and then I want to see a little bit more exposition of that here in Hebrews chapter 3, beginning in verse 12. The preacher writes this: "Take care, brethren, lest there should be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart in falling away from the living God. But encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, lest any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold fast the beginning of our assurance firm until the end, while it is said, 'Today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as when they provoked me.' For who provoked him when they had heard? Indeed, did not all those who came out of Egypt led by Moses? And with whom was he, God, angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they should never enter his rest, but to those who were disobedient? Verse 19, and so we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief." And so we see that it wasn't just the actions necessarily that we will read about in Numbers or that we read about in Exodus, but those actions were the outworkings of unbelief, the unbelief of the Israelites. All right, and I say it all the time, God hates complaining. He hates complaining. That should become abundantly clear to you as we work our way through Numbers. And he hates complaining because complaining is a manifestation of unbelief. You don't believe. When we complain, when I complain, it's because I don't believe that this is where God has put me for his glory and for my good. And that's what's going on here in Hebrews 3, 12 through 19. And this is a paragraph, right? It's one thought. And how do I know that? Because in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 12, you see there's an unbelieving heart. And in verse 19, the problem is unbelief. And so we can see this is a closed thought from 12 to 19. It's tied together by the concept of unbelief, of lack of faith. And again, as we mentioned last time, Hebrews is not a letter necessarily as it is a word of exhortation or a sermon. And so we see this long exhortation to believe in Hebrews chapter 3. And again, these rhetorical questions, right? Everyone who is listening to the preacher of Hebrews knows the answer to every single one of these questions in verses 16 through 18. And by the end of the book of Numbers, we will also know off the top of our heads very easily the answers to all of these questions that are being asked in Hebrews 3, 16 through 18. Okay, and so this is the importance of Numbers for us in the New Testament. It is, of course, telling the narrative, the story of God's working out His redemptive story through the life, death, resurrection, and ascension of His Son. There's no doubt about that. But these things, which we will study in the book of Numbers, are examples for us. And for the most part, they are negative examples. We ought not act like the Israelites acted, and we ought not act in unbelief as they acted. Okay? Now, as we finish up, a couple things. I want to revisit something that we talked about at the beginning of Leviticus, and we talked about it briefly again last week, and that is this concept of the chiastic structure of the Pentateuch. So we were talking about a chiasm. A chiasm is like a mountain and it has a peak in the middle. And we've made the case a couple of times that the book of Leviticus itself is a chiasm, with the high point of Leviticus being in Leviticus 16, the Day of Atonement. That's the high point of the book of Leviticus. That's the most important part of the book of Leviticus. Leviticus 16, the Day of Atonement. The day, the only day in the Israelite calendar where the high priest of Israel could go into the most holy place and see barely through the incense and through the smoke, see the mercy seat of God, the throne of God. And I also made the case that Numbers and Exodus also are similar, such that if you take Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers, they also create a mountain, a chiasm, with the Day of Atonement being in the center. And I also argued that Genesis and Deuteronomy have that as well, so that the Leviticus 16, the Day of Atonement, is the high point of the entire Pentateuch. I don't want to talk more about that. I want to talk about Exodus and Numbers. If you have an ESV study Bible, for example, there's a great table in the ESV study Bible that draws parallels between Exodus and Numbers. And so I'm going to lay out the argument now for Exodus and Numbers being parallel texts that point us to the Day of Atonement in Leviticus chapter 16. And I'll tell you, like, I've had this experience where, you know, during my devotional reading through the year, I'm reading through Exodus, and then I'm reading through Numbers, and it's like deja vu all over again as I'm reading through Numbers, right? And somebody asks me about water coming out of the rock, and I have to think to myself, well, is that the episode in Exodus, or is that the episode in Numbers, right? And so here's what we're going to do. I'm just going to go relatively briefly through some of these parallels that we're going to see in Exodus and Numbers, and we're going to take them in order, the order that they appear in Numbers, okay? You don't have to write all these down. If you have a good study Bible, or you go onto the interweb and you type in parallels between Exodus and Numbers, you can find yourself this table. But I just wanted to do it here just to give you a sense of some of the things that we're going to see. So in Numbers chapter 10, verse 29, Moses gets advice from his father-in-law. And that is similar to what happens in Exodus chapter 18, verse 1. Moses gets advice from his father-in-law. In Numbers chapter 10, verse 33, there's a three-day journey from Sinai. In Exodus 15, 22, there's a three-day journey to Sinai. In Numbers 11, 1-3, there's a complaint. It's not real clear what the complaint's about, but clearly the Israelites are complaining. And in Exodus 15, 22 through 26, there's a complaint of this same generation of Israelites about a lack of water. In Numbers 11, there's an episode of manna and quail. And back in Exodus 16, there's an episode of manna and quail. In Numbers 11, 16 through 30, leaders are appointed to assist Moses. And in Exodus 18, leaders are also appointed to assist Moses. In Numbers 12, this is a contrast. In Numbers 12, Miriam and Aaron rebel against Moses. And in Exodus 15, 20 through 21, Miriam sings a song of praise. And in Numbers 14, 39 to 45, Israel is defeated by Amalek. Whereas in Exodus 17, 8 through 16, Israel had defeated Amalek. Okay? So those are the parallels for the first generation of Israelites leading up to Numbers 14. Beginning in Numbers 20, we have the water from a rock episode. And by the way, that's a very significant episode, not just in the life of the Israelites, but even in the life of Moses. That's in Numbers 20, 1 to 13. And we had already previously seen an episode where water comes from the rock in Exodus 17, 1 through 7. In Numbers chapter 25, verse 2, the people sacrifice to other gods. And we saw that back in Exodus chapter 32, verse 6, where people sacrifice to other gods, specifically in that case, the golden calf. In Numbers 25, verse 5, the killing of apostates is demanded. And in Exodus 32, 27, the killing of apostates is demanded. In Numbers 25, 6 through 13, the Levites' status is enhanced in the sight of the people. Specifically, in Numbers, it will be Phinehas. In Exodus 32, 28 and 29, the Levites' status as a tribe is enhanced among the Israelites. And finally, in Numbers 25, verse 9, there's a plague on the people. And in Exodus 32, 35, there's a plague on the people. Right? And so this helps us, and again, of course, these are real historical events in redemptive history, but God has certainly fashioned these as a means by which his people would remember their history, right? These repeated events, especially as we see those exhortations in 1 Corinthians 10 and in Hebrews chapter 3, not to repeat these things, all right? And this is like bolded in redemptive history. When these things happen twice, we ought to learn from them especially. All right, finally, as the overview for the book of Numbers, if you would turn with me to Numbers chapter 33. Numbers 33. Numbers 33 gives us the summary, the inspired summary of the book of Numbers itself. Numbers chapter 33. And so what's happening here as a summary of the book of Numbers is we will see the movements of the Israelites from Egypt to Sinai to Kadesh to Moab. And we will see it near the end of Numbers 33, preparations being made for the Israelites' conquest of Canaan and the division of Canaan among the 12 tribes, right? You can find all of this in Numbers chapter 33. And I'm not going to read the entire chapter. There's lots of names in there. When we get to it in time, if the Lord does not return, then we will read through at that time. But just to give you an overview of Numbers 33, beginning in verse 1. These are the journeys of the sons of Israel, by which they came out from the land of Egypt by their armies, under the leadership of Moses and Aaron. And Moses recorded their starting places according to their journeys by the command of the Lord. And these are their journeys according to their starting places. And they journeyed from Ramesses in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month. On the next day after the Passover, the sons of Israel started out boldly in the sight of all the Egyptians, while the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn whom the Lord had struck down among them. The Lord had also executed judgments on their gods. Let me pause there. If you remember back in the Exodus study, as we were looking at the 10 plagues, we made a note at that time that those 10 plagues were specifically designed to strike down the Egyptian gods. And if you go back to those Exodus studies during the 10 plagues, I think there are three or four different sessions in the 10 plagues. I denoted at that time those gods which God was specifically judging in each one of those plagues. Verse 5. Then the sons of Israel journeyed from Ramesses and camped in Succoth. And they journeyed from Succoth and camped at Etham, which is on the edge of the wilderness. And then if you skip down, you go through here in verse 10. They journeyed from Elim and camped by the Red Sea. Verse 11. And they journeyed from the Red Sea and camped in the wilderness of Sin. Okay? And then they will eventually end up in verses 15 and 16, and they journeyed from Rephidim and camped in the wilderness of Sinai, and they journeyed from the wilderness of Sinai and camped at Kibroth Hattaava. All right, so that's the end of the first paragraph. They're at Sinai and leaving again. In verses 17 to 36 are the stops that they were making on the way from Sinai to Kadesh, which we had previously talked about. And then at the end of 48, they journeyed from the mountains of Abarim and camped in the plains of Moab by the Jordan opposite Jericho. And they camped by the Jordan from Beth Jeshimoth as far as Abel Shittim in the plains of Moab. So those are your three, as I previously mentioned, your three stops which they made, Sinai, Kadesh, Moab. And all of their stops, their triptych, as it were, is identified here in Numbers chapter 33. As I mentioned on this past Sunday morning, as Pastor Mike was preaching from Romans 1, and I made a bit of an apologetic argument about the veracity and the truthfulness of the Scriptures as we see them being played out in our culture today, I'll make the same argument right here. I ask you, if Numbers is a mythological book, I can't imagine, frankly, that there would be this much detail. Moses is keeping this detailed triptych as he and the Israelites move through the wilderness. And this is not, for any of you who have read extensively through any mythologies, this is not how mythologies read. This is how history reads. And so I just want to encourage you about the veracity, the truthfulness of the Scriptures. And I know sometimes this type of reading can be laborious, shall we say. But I would encourage you to not only read it, but to rejoice in it, because it has the ring of history, the ring of truth, the ring of veracity in it. And that should encourage us to rejoice in some of these different texts, including the genealogies as well, which we have discussed on multiple occasions in the past. And then at the end of Numbers chapter 33, beginning in verse 50, then the Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan opposite Jericho, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you cross over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you, and destroy all their figured stones, and destroy all their molten images, and demolish all their high places. And you shall take possession of the land and live in it, for I have given the land to you to possess it. And you shall inherit the land by lot, according to your families. To the larger you shall give more inheritance, and to the smaller you shall give less inheritance. Wherever the lot falls to anyone, that shall be his. You shall inherit according to the tribes of your fathers. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come about that those whom you let remain of them will become as pricks in your eyes and as thorns in your sides, and they shall trouble you in the land in which you live. And it shall come about that as I plan to do to them, so I will do to you. And so here in verses 50 through 56, we have the apportioning, the anticipation of the apportioning of the land of Canaan among the tribes of Israel. And then this exhortation and warning to make sure that when they go in, they clean house, because those Canaanites who are filling up their sins, have been filling up their sins over the past 400 years, they will become pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides. And of course, not to give away the end of the story, but that's exactly what happens. But the warning is here. And then in verse 56, the warning is clear. And it shall come about that as I plan to do to them, so I will do to you. And that should echo in your ears what we saw back in Leviticus 26 with the blessings and the curses that God poured out on Israel, warning them at the end of the giving of his law. All right? So that's the overview of Numbers. Hopefully that is helpful. Hopefully that'll help you to get your arms around it a bit. And the plan then, of course, for next time we are together, Lord willing, is to jump into the first census beginning in Numbers chapter 1.